Let's read together from verse 26. So do not be afraid of them. There is nothing concealed that will not be disclosed, or hidden that will not be made known. What I tell you in the dark, speak in the daylight. What is whispered in your ear, proclaim from the roofs. Do not be afraid of those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Rather, be afraid of the one who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? Yet not one of them will fall to the ground apart from the will of your Father. And even the very hairs of your head are all numbered. So don't be afraid. You are worth more than many sparrows. Whoever acknowledges me before men, I will also acknowledge him before my Father in heaven. But whoever disowns me before men, I will disown him before my Father in heaven. Well, the EU referendum in-out campaign is hotting up. Is it interesting? Is it exciting? I don't know. But certainly by those who want to stay in, what you might call the Yes campaign, and I'm making no comment on preferences or anything else, but just as an observation, those who are in the In campaign are definitely using fear as a key motive for staying in. What will happen if we leave the EU is the sun will no longer shine, there will no longer be bread on the tables, we will be poor, and there may be a world war. That's the general message of the In campaign, as my observation of it. Lots of reports coming out from the government saying how terrible things will be. Now, I'm exaggerating, but that's kind of how we're supposed to feel. I make no observations on whether those things are true that they're saying, not about the bread and the sun and everything, but about the economy and other factors, security and so forth. But fear, as everybody knows, is a very powerful weapon. I wonder what stops you telling people about Jesus. I reckon a lot of the time it's fear, isn't it? You know, what stops me when I'm walking down the street and I pass by someone, not telling them, hello, I've never met you before, who are you, what are you doing with your life, you need to know Jesus. Now, you could say there's all kinds of reasons, I've got no relationship with them, you know, it's a weird thing to do, it'd be cranky, you could say all those things and maybe they're true, but basically, I don't want to look like a bit weird. I fear what people might think of me. I fear that the bloke or the woman might lump me. I fear that they might laugh at me. I fear they might report me to the police. I fear the consequences of telling somebody. And you know what the worst thing is? That it's not really about random people you see on the street. It's like, you know, people you regularly travel on the train with, people you see on the bus, people you see as you're queuing up to drop off your kids or pick them up, people you see at the clubs you're in, people that you live with, people that you love. You fear telling them about Jesus. And there are all kinds of excuses, and maybe some of the time some of them are valid. Well, I don't know enough to be able to tell people. I'm not clever enough to be able to tell people. I'm not good enough. I don't have a good enough relationship with them. The time is just not right. It's not just the right time. It was just the wrong moment to say anything about that. That they'd really be offended if I said that to them. But I think more often than not, and of course you can only generalize, but more often than not, it's fear. It's fear that holds us back from telling people about Jesus. It's fear of men rather than fear of God. We fear that people will look down on us, that they will think that we're stupid, that we're put us in that box. You know, who wants to, in this day and age, be labeled a fundamentalist? It's like a term of abuse. You know, it's worse than all other forms of abuse, being called a fundamentalist. And if you tell people about Jesus, especially if you say he's the only way to God, he's the truth, he is the way, he is the only way, and without him you're lost. If you say that, you're a fundamentalist. And who wants to be a fundamentalist? It kind of equals terrorist. We fear what people will think of us. We fear that people will misunderstand us. We fear that people won't like us. We fear that maybe in some way or other, whether active or passive, people will persecute us. And for the disciples, as they were sent out by Jesus, when they listen to all that he describes about what's going to happen to them, not just now, but in the future, as Mark showed us last week, what will happen when Jesus has died and risen and the disciples are sent out with the message of him, he doesn't tell them, you're going to be very well received, everyone's going to love you, you're going to be welcomed in every city, it's going to be great. What he says is, you're going to be persecuted, there's going to be family problems for you, and society, in the main, will not welcome your message. Proverbs 29, verse 25 says this, the fear of man will prove to be a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord is kept safe. And Jesus is trying to encourage his disciples that they need to fear the Lord to be kept safe and not to fear men. It's the fear of men rather than God that holds me back from telling people the good news about the gospel, for saying what Jesus wants me to say. And the overarching theme of this whole section is don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Don't fear men, fear God. Don't be afraid. The section begins in verse 26. So do not be afraid of them. Do not be afraid of them. And of course, Jesus is talking about those various people who will persecute them as they go out with the message. Don't be afraid of them, Jesus says. And he goes on to say that what they're doing will be revealed one day, and they will be judged for what they're doing. See how he says that? There is nothing concealed that will not be disclosed or hidden that will not be made known. There will be a judgment for them on what they're doing. Now hold that thought. We're going to return to that in just a moment. As it says in Hebrews, everything will one day be laid bare before him to whom we must give account. But before we think about that, let's think about what Jesus goes on to say, which is that in the same way that everything will be revealed one day, that the persecution will be revealed one day, everything that's been done will be laid bare before the judge of all the earth. In the same way, here's a parallel thought. There's something that needs to happen right now, which is what I'm telling you needs to be told. What I'm whispering to you needs to be proclaimed from the rooftops. What I'm saying to you in the dark needs to be said in the daylight. And that's something that needs to happen right now. There will be a day when all things are disclosed, but right now, what I'm saying to you in private, says Jesus, what I'm telling you, what I'm teaching you, what I'm revealing to you, needs to be proclaimed, needs to be spread, needs to be published. Gospel truth, says Jesus, the truth of the good news of me is meant to be proclaimed from the roofs. Rooftops then were kind of like now, if you get a flat one, a good place to stand and to speak. And because there's not traffic noise and all that kind of thing, you could stand on a rooftop and you could gather a crowd around and you could speak and you could be heard from a distance. And Jesus says the gospel needs to be heard from a distance. It needs to be proclaimed to gathered groups. Gospel truth is meant to be disclosed. I used to, in one of the jobs I did, used to write press releases about really boring stuff that no one was really interested in, but I tried to make it sound interesting. You know, we've launched a new product, who cares? But you'd write a couple of pages about this new product and you'd have a picture of you pointing at it or it, you know, some screenshots or something like that. And you'd write the press release and maybe you would say for immediate release, or maybe you'd say, you know, press embargo until the 1st of April. Well, the gospel's a kind of a press release, but it's not a press release where there's an embargo. You know, there's a date before which you cannot disclose it. For the gospel, it's like for immediate release, right now, for immediate publicity. Publish it if you want. Blog it, post it, share it, right now. That's what the gospel is to be. I'm afraid of heights. I was recounting with someone the other day how I managed to get to the second section of the Eiffel Tower, which is quite high, isn't it? You know, give me some comfort. It's quite a long way up. But I got to the second section, got to the first section first, and then to the second section. But by the time I'm at the second section, my knees are going, my head's going, everything's going, I'm going to die. And only my brave family, who I protected up until that point, will be able to go up. And not only do I fear heights for myself, I fear heights for my children. So even just watching them going, yeah, like this, absolutely does my head in. Benjamin, my son, some of you know, is 6'6" tall, and there's, you know, low barriers, and he's like center of gravity somewhere up here, and all he has to do is just lean his head and he's gone. So it's terrible. And I got to the second thing, and it's like it puts 50 years on me. So, if this is the edge over here, I'm like, I'm all right here, but I get to here, and it's like, I can't move. And this leg won't go like this. I'm going, I can see the Paris over there, stuff like that. Well, that's funny, and I'll probably never cure it. Maybe some of you know a cure. You know, I've just done my shoulder out doing that. It's really tense now, that bit up there. I think I just relived the whole tension. I could actually see in my mind, I could honestly see in my mind the kind of green that goes out from the Eiffel Tower towards, you know, Champs-Élysées, whatever it is, or whatever the thing it is. But, you know, it's the same thing that grips us when we want to have a conversation about Jesus. I was reading a book about it last night. Like, you know, here we are, we're in a conversation with people, whether we're shy or whether we're pretty confident. Once we get rolling, most of us can chat with people. And for most of the time, we're over here. We're in the safe chat zone, talking about stuff that we're interested in. And then suddenly the God subject comes up, and it's like we've been aged 50 years. Because we stumble and we falter and we fear. It's like a spiritual vertigo. It's like a gospel vertigo, isn't it? Do you suffer with that? I suffer with that. It's like my mouth stops working properly because I fear men. You know, underneath, what is it that's stopping me? There's nothing physical. It's like the thing on the Eiffel Tower. There's nothing physical that's changed. You know, the air isn't different over here to over here. Something in my mind has changed. And when it comes to speaking the gospel, something in my mind changes because I fear men. Because really, that's who I'm trying to please. And what Jesus is saying is, this message is for proclamation right now. Get on with it. Is that what you're about? If you're a Christian here this morning, is that what you're about? Gospel proclamation. Not just talking about the gospel amongst ourselves, although we need to. Not just analyzing what it all means, but we need to. Not just studying the Bible, that we definitely need to understand the gospel, but proclaiming the gospel by all possible means. Are you fearlessly proclaiming the gospel? Jesus says it's all going to be made public one day. Everything's going to be made public. But this needs to be made public right now. In all the contexts that you live, with your friends, with your family, with your work colleagues, with the people you see and know, will you proclaim the gospel? With your closest friend, with the person you share a desk with the bloke you see every day in the paper shop. Now, maybe some of you won't be the ones who are standing on the rooftops proclaiming. God gives particular gifts to people who are able to explain the gospel and fearlessly proclaim in all kinds of difficult contexts. But to some degree or other, we all need to be gospel proclaimers, and we all need to be gathering people to hear the proclamation. And are you doing that, Christian? Are we doing that, Christchurch, Haywards Heath? Are we taking Jesus' words seriously where he says, get a message out there for immediate release? Don't be afraid, says Jesus. Preach the gospel. Secondly, don't be afraid, fear God. See that in verse 28. Don't be afraid, fear God. Do not be afraid of those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Rather, be afraid of the one who can destroy both soul and body in hell. As I said before, fear can be a very powerful incentive. And that's not wrong. It's not wrong to fear certain things, but it can be misplaced. I used to catch the Underground quite a lot. And I remember one day standing on the edge of the platform, not fearing heights, because it's only a little way down. But I looked, and there ahead of me is a rat. Don't know how that happened. I suppose there's loads of rats in the London Underground. But there was, this rat straight in front of me. And you know what? I would not dare get on that track because of the rat, because I don't like rats. I think they're horrible, scary. I had one in my bin once that I kind of beat to death because until it was well dead, because I was afraid. I wasn't like angry. I was just so frightened. And the weird thing is that, you know, if I drop my money or something down on the track, probably what would stop me getting on the track is the rat. Not the 11 kilovolts. Not the fact that there could be a train thundering down at any moment. It's just the rat that's stopping me jump. That's the point, isn't it, really? We need to fear the right things. Rather fear the electricity, rather fear the train that might rattle down the track than just fear a silly little rat. For the disciples, they would naturally fear those who threatened them. They would naturally fear those who would do violence to them and who could kill them. That's understandable. The worst might happen, but Jesus says, whatever you fear, whether you even fear death itself, whatever you fear, whoever you fear, you need to fear God more than that. In fact, in proportion, don't fear them at all. Don't fear them at all. Because God is the one you must fear. And that's distinctive Christian fear. It's the only fear that will sustain you through all kinds of persecutions and troubles. The fear of God that overwhelms the fear of men. How can I cure myself of this problem of vertigo, gospel vertigo? It's by fearing God more than fearing men. Isaiah talks about how distinctive God's people should be. Isaiah 8, verse 12 and 13 says this. Do not call conspiracy everything that these people call conspiracy. Do not fear what they fear, and do not dread it. The Lord Almighty is the one you are to regard as holy. He is the one you are to fear. He is the one you are to dread, and he will be a sanctuary. Just like Isaiah said, Jesus says, he's the one you're to fear. He's the one you're to dread. And for you, he will be a sanctuary, as we'll see in a moment. Don't fear what other people fear. Don't fear rejection. Don't fear failure. Don't fear growing old. Don't fear being shot by terrorists. Don't fear falling in a plane from the sky. Don't fear loneliness. Don't fear death. Don't fear persecution. Don't fear what people will think of you. Don't fear the abuse that people might give you. Don't fear that very subtle distancing that people might do from you because you tell them the gospel. Don't fear what everybody else fears. Don't be racked with fear. We are a society that is consumed with fear of isolation and rejection and not being good looking and not being the right weight and not having the right money and not having the right cars and not making the right choices about a whole load of things and not being in the right marriage and not being fulfilled. Don't fear all those things, says Jesus. Fear God. Nothing left to fear after that. And Jesus says, fear God. Because what he can do and what he decides is so much more significant than what men can do and what men decide. Yes, they can do the worst thing and they can kill you. But you have a soul. You have an eternal soul. You have the eternal you inside. That indestructible self. And who decides what happens to your soul? Whether it is separated from God in hell, whether it is reunited with the body in the new heavens and the new earth. Who decides that? Does anybody on this planet decide that? No, God decides that. And if that truth really impresses on you, if you really thought that, you wouldn't fear anything but him. And when you go to him, you would feel secure because he is a sanctuary to you. And I think the degree to which we really believe and kind of enter into, not just kind of believe from a distance, but enter into the truths of an eternal heaven to be gained and an eternal hell to be avoided, the degree to which those truths impress on us will be the amount that which we're able to deal with our fear. It'll influence so much our willingness to speak the gospel and sometimes be considered foolish. Paul says in 2 Corinthians 5:11, because we fear the Lord, we are compelled to preach the gospel. We know what it is. We try to persuade men. Since we fear the Lord, he says, we try to persuade men. Which is interesting. Of course, he talks about the motivation of love elsewhere and gratitude and all those things. But there he says, because we fear the Lord, not because we're somehow running away from him in fear, in terror, but because we realize he's the ultimate judge, we're trying to persuade people to enter into that new covenant that Nigel was talking about through the blood of Jesus and to be safe and secure in him. Because we fear God, we don't fear men so much. We fear that they may be lost, so we proclaim the gospel. Preach the gospel, fear God rather than men, and remember as you do, verses 29 to 31, God cares for you, God cares for you. Here we have an argument from one of the most insignificant creatures then and now. The word sparrow is used. It might be the house sparrow that we recognize, but it may be a little bigger than that. It may just be a generic word for any kind of small bird, so think of any blackbird or anything else, or a small pheasant, I don't know, something kind of that size, because it was for the poorest. Now, pheasant sounds a bit too luxurious. Let's just keep down with the blackbirds and the crows, that kind of level. For poor people then, it was occasionally a pet animal, but mostly it was the kind of cheapest form of food, cheapest form of meat. And Jesus argues from that cheapest thing through to us, his children. And Jesus says, he cares. He cares even for sparrows, so he certainly cares for you. See, it says there, not one of them will fall to the ground apart from the will of your Father. It might also be talking about the care, the observation of your Father. And he values you more than sparrows. See that verse 31? Don't be afraid. You're worth more than many sparrows, many of these little cheap birds. You're worth so much more than them, but he's even caring about them. So if these little worthless birds are noticed by God and cared for by God, these tiny bite-sized meals, so much more you are cared for by God, by your loving Father. So don't be afraid. He values his people much more than that, and he has intimate knowledge. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny, a very small amount of money? Verse 29, yet not one of them will fall to the ground apart from the will of your Father. His knowledge is comprehensive and intimate. And then verse 30, and even the very hairs of your head are numbered. So he observes their fall, and then Jesus uses a different illustration to say, even the very hairs of your head, some of us that gets an easier proposition to count as you get older, but even in my little head, it's very difficult to count how many are there. Some kind of enormous number that's kind of difficult to count, it's just a point of exaggeration. Jesus knows. He says the Father is aware of the intimate details of your life. And what's the point? What's the point of saying that God knows that? Nothing happens outside of his will. Nothing happens outside of his observation. What's the point? Well, they're going to suffer. They're going to fear. They're going to need to fear God rather than men. And they need to know that God sees and God knows and God cares for them, even in their suffering, even in their persecution. They so need to know, and we so need to know, that there's no part of our life, there's no area of our life, there's no day of our life that is out of God's control and knowledge. He knows every saint that falls to the ground. Just think across the world right now. There are people who are literally falling to the ground, being persecuted and killed because of their faith. He knows everyone. He sees everyone. He sees every transaction. He sees them sold. He sees every transaction of your life. He has intimate knowledge and absolute care and concern. It's a great old hymn, Sovereign Ruler of the Skies, that has these lines. Plagues and death around me fly, till he bids, I cannot die. Not a single shaft can hit, till the God of love sees fit. God sees, God knows, God rules, God cares. Don't be afraid. That will be such a comfort to you. You see, these words aren't about guilting you into doing a bit more evangelism. They're about fearing God rather than men. Yes, because he decides your eternal fate, but yes, too, because he cares for you. You're trying to witness to your friend and tell him about Jesus. He sees, he knows, he cares. As we thought about last week, he is with you and he will help you with words to say. He is intimately involved with your life. So don't be afraid. And then finally, don't be afraid. Confess Christ, verse 33. This is a great encouragement and a great warning all at the same time in verse 33. There's been a few ceremonies recently. There's been the Oscars and the Brit Awards. All of you watched the Brit Awards, didn't you? I like to watch the Brit Awards once a year. Keeps me up to date with what's going on. And I buy all the albums, apart from Little Mix or whatever they're called. What was that group called? Terrible. James Bay, he was good. And at those award ceremonies, often someone comes up, particularly in the Oscars, and stands up at the podium and they give credit, they confess, they acknowledge all the people who have influenced them, helped them, you know, thanks to my mum and to my manager and to my team and to my guitarist or whatever it is, if they're a band, or to my producer or the person who wrote this amazing script or the person who gave me my first break in acting. And Jesus is talking about the same kind of thing here, to acknowledge, to confess, to state some kind of allegiance. And what Jesus says, which is a wonderful truth, is if we put ourselves in his team, if we acknowledge that we're on the side of Jesus, if we put our trust in him, if we say out loud, I'm trusting Jesus, the amazing thing is at the ultimate ceremony, the ultimate prize giving, when we're before God the Father at the final day of judgment, you know what? Jesus stands up at the podium and he acknowledges us. Isn't that an amazing thought? Jesus acknowledges us. And all we've got to do is just put our trust in him and acknowledge him and confess him. And he'll acknowledge us. Not just before some old faceless group of people who are in the music industry or some faceless group of people who give out Oscar ceremonies and a whole load of other drunk people in the ceremony. No, before God the Father. In the ultimate test, Jesus says, I'll acknowledge you if you acknowledge me. That's a wonderful gospel message. But he also says the opposite is true. If you don't want to acknowledge me, if you don't want to be on my team, if you don't want to be in my kingdom, then I won't acknowledge you at that moment. Now, this is not about those occasional moments when we fail to stand up or to speak out for Jesus when we really ought to. It does challenge those to some degree. It does make us think about those, but it's not just picking the kind of one-offs to say, okay, yesterday you didn't acknowledge me, that's it. That's not what this text is about. It's saying, either you nail your colours to the mast and you say, I'm with Jesus, or you don't. And if you do, even with your failures, even with those bad days, if you're fundamentally confessing Jesus and saying, I want to be with you, Jesus, then he will acknowledge you. But the opposite too is true. We don't confess him, he will not speak up for us. So there's really two things to think about as we close to do with this last point. Many visitors are here this morning. I don't know where you are before Jesus, but I have to say to you that Jesus is calling on us all to acknowledge him, to say he is the Lord and the King, the Messiah, the one sent by God, the Father, to be both King and Saviour. And you need to acknowledge that to know safety and security. To fear God is to put your trust in Jesus and his work. And if you don't understand what that means, then I'm very happy to speak to you about that afterwards, what it means to put your trust in Jesus. But perhaps if you do know what that means, but you haven't actually submitted yet, Jesus' words are a profound challenge to you to say, you must acknowledge me. You must acknowledge me. You must put your trust in me right now to be secure on that final day. But at the same time, these words are such an encouragement to you as a Christian this morning. There might be shame in being a Christian. There might be some kind of pressure. There might be people who want to put us down. But the greatest shame is if we ignore Jesus. But the greatest comfort is that if we acknowledge Jesus, he will acknowledge us. And Jesus speaks these words with such pastoral care and sensitivity, doesn't he? Because I hope at the end of them, you don't feel like beaten up to say, oh, I need to do more evangelism. But you feel encouraged to say, yeah, I need to fear God because that makes perfect sense. Yeah, I'm so encouraged that God knows all about me. And yes, I am so encouraged to keep speaking the gospel because one day Jesus will speak up for me. And that's what Jesus is calling us to do. Come on, preach the gospel. Be part of this gospel church, proclaiming the gospel. Use every opportunity. Do that fearing God rather than men. Do that knowing God cares for you. Confess Christ, and he will acknowledge you on the last day.